you are emphasizing on the important subject of like, how one should avoid criticizing or blaspheming or any kind of offense against a Vaishnava. So it is to that extent that we should not even try to correct at our level. First we have to see ourselves, how, where we are situated. In that case, when it is seen that some senior Vaishnava are trying to correct in their humble way, that is also is considered that that person should mind his business and by example only should teach the other person, the other devotee. So in that case, what may happen that a neophyte will feel that now no one will criticize me, no one will talk about me, so I am happy where I am and it's very happy situation.
Those who are designated in a position of authority, it is their duty to train devotees how to progress in Krishna consciousness. It is their duty to disclose to you the faults that you must overcome. But that is not criticism. That is not something that is done out of anger to belittle you, and it is not something that is done behind your back. If you do not have such compassionate souls correcting you and pointing out the faults that you must overcome, that you have very little chance of properly advancing in Krishna consciousness. The question is, are we in that position? And if we are, what is our motivation? And if we're not, we have no business finding faults in anyone. The difference is, a compassionate Vaishnava, if he points out the faults in you, he's trying to uplift you. He's not trying to criticize you. Just like you are a father, if you do not correct and point out the discrepancies in your children, how will they learn? But as a father, when you explain the faults in your children, are you doing it for their welfare? In fact, your motive is that they become better than you. A father wants his son and daughter to be better than him. He's not trying to push them down. If that is genuinely our motivation, when we correct another devotee, then that is to be considered a very valuable act of devotional service. But if that is not our motive, you should be warned to not say a word, because it will destroy your spiritual life.
Ours is a preaching moment. Ours is a preaching moment. should a neophyte devotee concentrate on trying to be a reasonably good devotee and then undertake preaching, or while he is being a devotee, he should also endeavor to share his whatever experiences he has had in his life? Because one is not perfect oneself in any way. One has a long way to go on the path of devotion. Would that person be right in trying to share whatever experiences he has about devotion in life?
If we are following the regulative principles, if we are engaging in basic sadhana, then it is to be understood that we are essentially exemplary. And we are preaching as an act of humble service to assist our spiritual master. And we're also preaching for our own purification. You do not have to be perfect to preach. In fact, in this movement that we are connected to, if we do not preach, we will never become perfect. That is part of the purification to make us perfect. It is our humble service. We should never think that we are the preachers. We should think that we are assisting the real preachers by repeating their message to others. We are simply the messenger delivering the words of the true preachers. But that is our service. You may not be under the illusion that you can deliver a person from the cycle of birth and death, but you can bring a suffering fallen soul to the lotus feet of someone who can deliver them from birth and death. That is our preaching. Through our words, through our actions, that we bring more and more and more unfortunate people to that place by which they can become fortunate. To convince them to read Srila Prabhupada's books. To convince them to chant the holy names according to his instruction. To convince them to associate with devotees. We are bringing them into the atmosphere by which they can become perfect. And that is our duty. And we cannot wait to become perfect to do that. We must do it now. For that matter, you might as well just sleep all day. Because anything you do for Krishna, you can become puffed up. If you cook something nicely, you can become puffed up. If you lead nice kirtan, you can be puffed up. If you dance nicely, you can become puffed up. If you will offer your obeisances nicely, you can become puffed up. If you serve the other Vaishnavas nicely, you can become puffed up. So does that mean if we sleep all day, then even then we'll become puffed up? That just see how I'm so humble that I'm sleeping all day. Everyone else is puffed up. Whatever we do, we're basically puffed up in this material world. But engaging in all forms of devotional service, including preaching, we have to do it in the proper frame of mind. And that means we have to have nice sadhana. We have to be very eagerly hearing the proper words of Srimad Bhagavatam. We have to be associating with proper devotees. In this way, we are bestowed a good intelligence by which we can understand in all of our activities that our eternal position is to be the servant of the servant of the servant. And as soon as we see pride in our heart, and it's in all of our hearts, we have to witness that pride as our deadliest enemy. And we should preach to purify ourselves from that pride. Because our preaching, we are not the preachers. We're only the humble servants of the real preachers, simply delivering their message. Srila Prabhupada called himself a postal peon. Peon means the lowliest occupation. A peon is just one who just serves the order. Postal peon means just that lowly servant who just delivers the message. If the postman delivers you one crore of rupees, is he proud thinking, I have given you 1 crore of rupees? And if the postman comes to collect 1 crore of rupees from you to give it to who? To your debtor, does he think that I am taking it? The postman simply feels that he's the servant. Nothing is ours. Nothing is ours to give, and nothing is ours to take. We're just assisting Krishna and the great souls when we're preaching and in all of our activities. And by hearing properly, we understand that principle. We are not the enjoyers. We are not the benefactors of anyone. We are simply the assistants, the servants of the great souls, giving and collecting on their behalf. And in this mood we must preach, according to our capacity, according to the capacity that Krishna is giving us. It's not our capacity. When Srila Prabhupada was coming into the nation of America, he was declaring himself before God to be a puppet, asking Krishna, now, my Lord, you can make me dance as you would like me to dance. You can make my words suitable for them to understand. I am the insignificant beggar. That is our eternal position, to be the insignificant beggar of Krishna, begging for his mercy, begging to be allowed to engage in the service of his devotees. We should develop this mood, and then with full enthusiasm, with all the power God has given us, we should perform our service. If we are asked to preach, we must preach with all the force God gives us. If we're asked to cook, we must cook as best as God empowers us to cook. If we're asked to collect funds, we should collect as much as we have the power to collect. We should not think, well, let me hold back because I will become proud. Because holding back is actually false pride. Holding back means I'm the doer. I think that I will get credit. To give all of our life's energies in the service of Guru and Krishna, whatever that may be, is actual pursuance of humility. But it must be done in that spirit, that I am just the instrument. And by hearing Bhagavat, and by associating with good devotees, and by chanting the holy names, that spirit gradually becomes ingrained within our hearts. And then the service itself and the sadhana itself would purify us from pride and all other forms of anarthas. When we go on the yatra to such a holy place, supremely holy place as Sri Vrindavan Dham, we should not be going like a materialistic person on a vacation, just to get away from the anxieties of life or just to enjoy seeing sights. We should go to Vrindavan primarily for several reasons. One is to purify our hearts, to purify our lives. We should be going not as a vacation, but as a tapasya. We should be going in a spirit of sacrifice. We should be going to dedicate all of our time, all of our consciousness, exclusively to hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord for the purification of our hearts. And hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord in such a holy place has, as Guru Maharaj said, over 100 times the potency of performing our sadhana anywhere else. So it is such a precious opportunity, and every moment should be utilized exclusively to enrich our spirituality and to awaken our dormant love of Krishna. We should go in a spirit of sacrifice for purification. And we should go in a spirit of service. Just as Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, do not try to see Krishna, but try to serve Krishna in such a way that he wants to see you. In the same way, we shouldn't be going simply to see Vrindavan. We should be going to engage in devotional service in such a way that Vrindavan Dham is pleased that we are there. And when Sri Radharani Vrindavaneshwari, the Queen of Vrindavan, sees that we are humbly endeavoring to inspire, enthuse, and serve her devotees, and sees that we are coming in a humble and prayerful mood, so that we can become a better servant of her devotees, then only will she reveal Vrindavan Dham to your eyes. You cannot see Vrindavan with these material eyes. You can see the external appearance of Vrindavan, where there are hogs and garbages and desert areas. You can see those things with your material eyes. you can also see nice trees and everything. And no doubt that everything in Vrindavan is divine and spiritual, but its divinity is revealed to you according to your service attitude, according to your humility, according to your eagerness to please Guru and Krishna, according to your eagerness to serve the Vaishnavas. In reciprocation, Srimati Radharani reveals Vrindavan to you. So we should go in that mood as a sacrifice, as a means of offering our love to Sri Sri Radharani. And the best way to serve the devotees is to be humble to the instructions that are given to us. To go to each holy place, to attentively hear, to enthusiastically chant in kirtan, to intensely pray for mercy, where mercy is most needed. This should be our mood of entering Vrindavan. Yes.
Maharaj, we are trying our best and we are endeavoring to be serious about our sadhana. Mm-hmm. But still we find that on account of Maya, we are not able to progress satisfactorily. What is the reason there? And how should we overcome?
Who can say that they are trying their best? Do you really feel that you are trying your best? This is an illusion that we are trying our best. We can always do much better. We can always do much more. We should know that this type of justification is a great impediment to our spiritual progress. That I'm doing the best I can. Because anyone can say that at any level. We should always be struggling to do more. If we're not struggling to do more, we don't make spiritual progress. If we're just satisfied at a certain level, that now I'm doing a safe degree of sadhana. Now, I'm not doing too much, because if I do too much, then my relatives will criticize me. And I'm not doing too little, because I'm just doing just enough. And then you're just content like that. Then there's no struggle. We must struggle. The path of bhakti is a path of struggle. In fact, any spiritual advancement on any real path, you have to struggle. We may be doing just 16 rounds, but we have to struggle more as we're chanting each name to hear. Not just allow our mind to go other places. We must struggle to improve the quality of how we are associating with devotees. Every aspect of our spiritual life, we should be struggling to improve. And when we struggle to improve, we make great progress. No pain, no gain. And also, we should not be content. We must always be anxious and eager to improve ourselves, to do more. That is this type of consciousness in which we can make real spiritual advance. And you cannot judge your spiritual mass advancement by how you feel. You judge your spiritual advancement by how you're pleasing Guru, Vaishnavas, and ultimately Nithai Gaurachandra and Sri Sri Radhan Krishna. And through hearing, we can understand whether we are pleasing them. Are we really following the instructions properly? If we are, and we're struggling, and we're eager, then we know we're pleasing them, and we're making spiritual advancement. Your spiritual advancement is not always recognizable to your senses and to your mind. You must understand it on the basis of faith in proper authority. Understand? Because as you're making spiritual progress, all the anartas start coming up. And sometimes when you come to a certain stage of Krishna consciousness, you feel yourself more lusty, more envious, more proud than you ever felt in your whole life. And that's part of your advancement. That all the filth, all the dirt is coming out. When a house is filthy dirty, it looks dirty. But when you start cleaning it, it really looks dirty. Because in a dirty house, you only see the outer layer of the dirt. But when you start sweeping, then all the dirt starts coming into your nose, into your eyes, into your ears, all over your body. So you see more dirt than ever while you're cleaning. So if you understand that you're going through the proper method and process of cleaning, whatever the appearance may be, we know that we're making spiritual progress. So that's the only thing we have to know, is we are following the process in the proper way, which means we're struggling to do our sadhana and to purify our lives every day according to proper instruction. If you're doing that, you are definitely making spiritual progress.
Maharaj,
another
question. Chanting, worshipping, and preaching. What degree of precision you accord to each one of the devotional services?
What degree of what?
Chanting, worshipping Lord Krishna and preaching zealously, all zealously, what degree of precision you would accord to each one of such devotional services?
The first precedence is in hearing and chanting. Hearing in the association of devotees, reading the proper books, Srila Prabhupada's books, and chanting the holy names of Krishna. That is the foundation of our spiritual progress. And our ability to worship, our ability to preach, can only be to the degree that we are properly hearing and chanting the glories and the names of the Lord. If you have a strong foundation, you can build a beautiful house on that foundation, and there will be stability, and you can do wonderful things in that house. But if the foundation is weak, then whatever you build upon it will really have no stability. So hearing and chanting is the foundation, the basis of spiritual life. hearing and chanting in the association of sincere devotees. We can't perform any other spiritual activity or devotional activity properly unless we are sincerely hearing and chanting in the association of sincere devotees.
In trying to improve our service, we tend to judge other devotees in the past. They might have made some mistake, and we try to improve on those points. But because of our impure state, it might be just our fault finding tendency. So is that really criticism, or we should always try to improve by seeing other experiences of the other devotees? What is actually criticism of the devotees?
If you are in a position where that devotee is willing to hear from you and to improve according to your inspiring words, whether they be criticism or encouragement, then in a mood of service, you should try to help that devotee. But if you are not in a position where you can actually uplift or encourage that devotee by your words, it's better to just through your example, do wonderful service which will inspire their hearts in that way.
Maintaining our relationship with our godbrother and god sister, sometimes we take a lower position. Just to please or just to make us so, we may take a humble position also. But at one stage, the mind convinces you that you have become enough humble now. You don't need to act more humbly.
Hmm?
You have acted enough now. You don't have to act more humbly. You cannot force yourself so much. You cannot try more to please this devotee, you have acted enough. At that time, how do you convince your mind that still, and you should go on trying to please the devotee?
To the degree that you force your mind to take a humble position, to that degree you will make spiritual progress. And to the degree your mind forces you to take a proud position, to that degree your spiritual life is either in a standstill or will go backwards. You have to be convinced of that with your intelligence. The nature of the mind is it wants to be the enjoyer, it wants to be the controller, and it wants to be worshipped as God. That is the nature of the conditioned mind. And it will find every possible excuse to give up the principle of humble devotion. But if we want to make spiritual advancement, we must see this mind as our worst enemy. And we should not listen to the mind. We should listen to our intelligence. And intelligence is the word that Krishna has given us. That we are the eternal servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. And you are a doctor, you know that to the degree the symptoms are acute in a disease, to that degree there has to be strong medicine. So to the degree our mind is telling us that why should you take a humble position? You should enjoy. To that degree, our disease is acute and we need very strong medicine. And what is the strong medicine? To chant the holy names, Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
And to beat the mind down by engaging our mind and senses in devotional service. Lord Chaitanya says to be more humble than a blade of grass. That is our goal in life. We should settle for nothing less. Yes?
Foremost duty of the head of a grass household in terms of his own spiritual progress vis-a-vis his grass household's spiritual progress.
What is the foremost responsibility?
Yes.
Foremost responsibility is to associate with sadhus and respect and serve the sadhus, and from them to learn how to perform sadhana bhakti and to execute that bhakti. This is what the shastra says. It's the first duty of the grihasthas to become humble servants of sadhus, to receive their blessings through their instructions. And that instruction is that we should chant every day, we should worship the Lord in our house, we should live pure lives, no sinful activities, and we should direct our whole family first and foremost according to these principles. When Srila Prabhupada was a little boy, his father, Gaur Mohan Day, every day would invite minimum of 6 to 12 sadhus to the house to give them prasad, to serve them very humbly, and then to beg with great sincerity that please bless my son that he will become a devotee of Srimati Radharani. And in his own life, Srila Prabhupada always saw his father chanting japa, worshipping the deity of Radha Govindaji. In this way, such a wonderful and perfect example. So we should all, as the head of a household, aspire in this way. To show our children, by our example, how we are humble servants of the great souls, by following their instructions and living pure lives centered around Krishna.
But it's not necessary, Maharaj, that one would get full support all the time.
It's usually necessary that you do not get full support. Because if you get full support, you don't have to struggle. You don't have to really go against odds. And to have to struggle is good. So even if one member of your family is against you, that's your good fortune. Because they're creating that person is creating an atmosphere in which you have to really struggle. You have to really go against your sentiments to fulfill the word of Krishna. So you should know that these opposing forces are necessary requirements for our spiritual progress. If everything's just right as we like it, then we become very sleepy. We may do everything, but it's in a very sleepy mood, complacent. But it may be the whole world against you, maybe your whole caste against you, or it may just be one person against you, but that person keeps you like, yes, it forces you, when you are challenged, you are forced to make very convinced decisions toward Krishna. So anyone who opposes our devotional service, we should take it as Krishna giving you a challenge to overcome, to prove to him that you really want to be a devotee.
Krishna is always fulfilling everyone's desires, and when we become devotees, we realize that Krishna is actually fulfilling your desires every moment. Whatever desire you have, he is fulfilling. But then, with such intensity, we desire for so many material things. How can we desire for Krishna? How we can locate our desires towards Krishna to desire for Krishna intensely, so that Krishna can fulfill?
Simply by executing the order of the spiritual master. We have to find out what Krishna wants through the spiritual master. And we have to live to fulfill that desire. That is why Krishna has given you intelligence to discriminate what is your desire and what is Krishna's desire. If you are aspiring for your own desires, then you will suffer birth after birth after birth. If you are struggling to fulfill Krishna's desire, then you will be liberated from repetition of birth and death. So we must discriminate, and then we must use our free will to serve Krishna.
Maharaj, we know that what is good and what is bad for our spiritual life, but so many times we are not able to stop our bad activities. We know what's good or what's bad for our spiritual life. But so many times we are not able to stop our bad activities. So what should we do?
We must accept what is favorable for devotional service and reject what is unfavorable for devotional service. We have to struggle. We have to be willing to say no to Maya. But also, we must be careful to put ourselves in an environment where it's possible. If you allow yourself to be in an environment where it's impossible to control your mind and senses, the problem is, why did you go there? Why are you in such a circumstance? So therefore we have to understand from senior devotees how important it is to be in saintly association and to avoid those circumstances and those people that create an atmosphere which is impossible for us to overcome. That is very important. If you've been going to horse races for 20 years and you become a devotee, then you say, well, I'll go to the horse race, but I will not gamble. And then you end up gambling and you say, well, it was too much for me. I had no power to control it. Of you're smoking cigarettes for 10 years, and you say, well, I'll associate with people smoking cigarettes, but I will not smoke. You will smoke. So you have to avoid the atmosphere where sinful activities are being performed, first of all. And then we should simply try very hard and continue our sadhana. And gradually, if we are following these principles, Krishna will give us the strength to overcome. You have to know that Krishna is in your heart, and he sees whether you're sincerely trying or whether you're not. And if you are, gradually he will purify you and give you spiritual strength. If we know that we have a great upsurge of lust in our hearts, then we should, whether we're with our wives or whether whatever situation, we should try to make our home a controlled environment where that we minimize the agitation as far as possible. And how is that? You know better than me. We should have good sadhana. We should not spend excessive time alone together in situations where lust is awakened. We have to create an atmosphere in our life where those situations are reduced, minimized. And if we do that and have good sadhana, gradually we'll become purified, and gradually we'll have more and more spiritual strength to overcome this.
Human body, we have many obligations to various people, to the demigods, to our parents, to society, and so many others. But one who surrenders to Krishna has no obligations left in this world. So we keep telling others that how to convince ourselves that supposing a devotee dies, then is it necessary to perform all the rituals that are performed after death? Or is it just enough to surrender to Krishna and have faith that he will look after our well-being and the well-being of all those who are left in this world after us?
We have our social obligations, but our social obligations should be done in a mood of service to Lord Krishna. Just as when Ravana was killed by Ram and his son Indrajit had already been killed, Vibhishan already rejected Ravana. Vibhishan, as far as he was concerned, this demon brother of mine, let him be eaten by animals. But Ram told him no. Even though Ravana was such a terrible demon, and he was the worst enemy of Ram, he even stole Sita, and he spent his life blaspheming Ram, trying to destroy Ram. Ram ordered Vibhishan that it is your obligation to perform the last rites for your brother. You do it for me. And Vibhishan performed the last rites for Ravana. And through this act, we understand that as grihasthas, there are certain social obligations that are required to be performed, but they should be done in a mood of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because Vibhishan performed those last rites for the purpose of, he performed them in such a way that his soul could be liberated. That is the mood in which we should perform all our social obligations. It's not that we abandon them. We abandon those social obligations that are unnecessary and that are absolutely contrary to the principles of Krishna consciousness. If there's a social gathering of all relatives and they're drinking alcohol, you should know that you have no obligation to have anything to do with that. But if it's something like a funeral rite, or even it could be a marriage, if you go to give the blessings of Krishna or to perform the rites in a Krishna conscious manner, then it is to be done. Give her a microphone.
It is necessary for the rites to be done for oneself.
For oneself?
Yes. Because we believe that if we surrender to Krishna, only the kirtan of the Vaishnava should be enough and no other rites should be performed.
That's correct. That's all you require. You should let the Vaishnavas perform the rites. Or at least let them be there chanting the holy names.
Those who understand English, they always have an advantage of having their personal association. They can open their mind just face to face. The people who don't understand English, now this is a feeling that we don't have a chance to personally associate. It's also recommended that disciples should have personal relationship with this guru. But if he has no faith, anyone in between, so how do we
there are so many devotees that translate. If you give me your blessings, I will learn Hindi. But until that day, if that day ever comes, all I could do is try to serve you through translators. Okay. About 5 minutes, translate something.